It's time to head out on the front porch on KFRM. Grab your favorite drink, sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation on the front porch.
Welcome to On the Front Porch. I'm Tamara Wallace, and I'm visiting with Dr. M.H. Marie Ellen Pelletier from Vancouver, Canada. Dr. M.H. is an award-winning workplace mental health expert, psychologist, executive coach, speaker, and author of The Resilience Plan, a strategic approach to optimizing your work performance and mental health. With a robust understanding of the intersection between business success and strong workplace mental health, Dr. M.H. brings a signature mix of business and clinical expertise to the groups she works with by translating psychology research into strategies professionals, business leaders, and their teams need to thrive. Welcome to On the Front Porch, Dr. M.H.
Oh, thank you, Tamara. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Dr. M.H., tell us how you got started in your career as an author.
Well, most of my writing had been academic writing and then industry publications, but specifically what got me to the book is that I was working with individuals I work with in my coaching practice, as well as audiences I would speak to about the concept that made it in the book, and they would often say, oh, that's so helpful to have this now. I now will have this for the rest of my life. And I wish I had it sooner. And then I started hearing this a bit more often. If I had a book, that would be one way to get this in more people's hands sooner so they can be even more proactive about being strategic about their resilience and probably save a few burnouts. So that's what pushed me to writing the book.
Tell us why you wrote the book.
I wrote the book because so many people are getting so much done every day in their professional and their personal life, and they get to a point where they need something to give them an edge. And they realize, or they initially think, they can actually wing their resilience or just will it to be there when they need it. But that's not how it works. Resilience is a state. It gets depleted, so we need to nourish it. But we need to have a personal, customized, strategic plan to do this. Just having the information about what we need to do for resilience doesn't do it for most people. What we need is that strategic plan. And so bringing what we know from psychology and what we use in strategy in business together just led to creating a way to communicate this that's straightforward, applicable, and makes sense to a lot of people. So that's the reason why I thought, okay, I'm going to put this in a book.
How much research did you have to do for your book, and how did you go about it?
You know, Tamara, I think it's possibly a combination of all the research and readings and academic research reading that I do on a weekly basis for the past few decades. And, of course, as you get, you know, closer to a book, you ramp up certain areas of doing your research. So the research probably closest to the book and then writing the book, that's probably a total of 4 years. But truly, it started building way before this.
How long did it take you to write this book?
The writing itself, I would say about, you know, given different phases and different rounds of edits and all, there was a lot of thinking and planning before even starting to write. But if I take the thinking out of the equation, the actual phases of writing, 2 years.
Tell us what kind of books you like to read.
Well, in terms of books, I tend to go towards fiction for myself, because during the day, a lot of my work brings me to reading a lot of academic articles and research and that kind of thing. So on my personal time, I really like the nonfiction. I love to read about various things. Sometimes it's just a light story. to relax. Sometimes it's also, I love reading about a particular National Geographic explorer who writes about her adventures, and because I love nature and I love resilience, and her stories are in large part involving resilience. I quite enjoy that. Her name is Sarah Markey, and I quite enjoy her book.
Tell us about the organizations you belong to.
Oh, many. I mean, the thing is, for most of us, depending on the work we do, I find, and we know from research also, but most of us have found this, when you find communities of people that have an interest in the same area as you, sometimes it's a passion, sometimes it's just great expertise, it always adds to our community, right? And so for myself, there are communities I've been part of since even before, you know, starting my career when I was still in university. So associations like the American Psychological Association and the Canadian Psychological Association. And then over time, as I progressed in my career, I also became involved myself in these associations, so not just as a member, for example, but contributing in committees and board of directors of, say, the Canadian Psychological Association, the International Association of Applied Psychology, the World Health Organization in various ways. So it's in part initially getting something and learning, and over time it's still doing that, but also contributing. And I value all this personally and in my career.
Tell us about your academic and industry awards you have won.
Oh, well, it's, you know, what tends to happen, I think these awards are useful sometimes for continuing the conversation about how, as a profession, we're moving things forward and what we value, what needs to happen. And so, you know, some of those awards are more academic in terms of the quality of research, that kind of thing. Sometimes they're more industry-focused in terms of providing new ideas to industries. So, for example, Benefits Canada for a workplace mental health type of leadership. But yeah, whether they're academic or industry-focused, yes, we sometimes get those as individuals, and that's wonderful. What I think is even more wonderful with these is that it hopefully inspires others to look at other ways, additional ways in which we can move things forward with the highest level of creativity and quality as well.
Tell us the publications you have been featured in.
Well, you know, I'd say publications that you get featured in, it's similar to, for me anyway, the intention behind why you're writing, or for who are you writing this book. And even though, yes, books sometimes will be hopefully helpful to an even broader range than exactly who you wrote it for, similarly, when, I mean, my goal is to help even more people think more strategically about their resilience. And so I share this message in the book, but also in other publications. So things like Forbes, Fast Company, Inc., Mary Claire, CEO World, different publications that are read by individuals that could benefit from this message.
As a kid, what books did you grow up reading?
I was reading mostly two categories. I was reading adventures types of books, and then I was reading comics, like Asterix or things like that. Just enjoying the combination of diversity. But I loved reading. Like, I would actually wake up earlier before going to school, like elementary school, to have a moment to read in my bed my just fiction books.
Now, are there any books or authors that inspired you to become a writer?
Oh, so many. So many. One that I would bring up, actually, I would bring up, if you start with one, you can bring up many, but I'll start with one. So there's a book that's called Mind Over Mood, and that book was published in a couple of editions. It's over a million sold around the world. It's a workbook that's based on cognitive behavior therapy, very practical. The two authors are Greenberger and Podesky. So that second author, Dr. Christine Podesky, is based in California, has been involved in the development, the research, the practical application. She trains psychologists all around the world, and she's amazing, absolutely remarkable. And I've had the chance in my professional training to attend some of her trainings. And I had the immense chance to have her as one of the endorsers of my book. But I would say her writings are immensely inspiring for me, both her academic writings and this book that I was just mentioning, because they are very aligned with what I value in my own writing, even though that our styles are different and targets are different. Combination of solidly based in research, so we know that the concepts are solid, and brought in a very practical, sometimes I use the word digested way, so that people, I mean, all of us, right? Our lives are very full, almost overflowing at times. So it's not like we have hours to take a concept and then translate it to our own life. The more all this has been done for us, the better. We can just take it and go. And that's something I value very much in her writing.
I'm Tamara Wallace talking with Dr. M.H. Marie Ellen Peltier from Vancouver, Canada. We have learned about her becoming an author. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, we will learn about her book, The Resilience Plan, A Strategic Approach to Optimizing Your Work Performance and Mental Health. Back on the front porch, I'm Tamara Wallace, visiting with Dr. M.H. Marie Ellen Peltier from Vancouver, Canada. We have learned about her becoming an author. Now we are going to learn about her book, The Resilience Plan, A Strategic Approach to Optimizing Your Work Performance and Mental Health. Dr. M.H., resilience is not given. You need a strategy. Tell us about this.
Yeah. Well, it connects. I say this because that is sometimes often a misconception that we have. We think, oh, I've gone through all of these challenges so far in my life with success, with resilience, and so that must be who I am. It's part of my personality. It's part of my identity. And even sometimes people around us will support that. They'll say, oh, you're my rock, or you're the rock of the family, you're the rock of the team. And so we get to a point where we think it's a given. I am this characteristics of resilience. As it turns out, no, resilience is not a personality trait. It's not a given that we just have in us. Part of what contributed to us showing resilience before is often a combination of variables, of factors in the context, often protective factors that contributed to us doing this. Yes, there are personality traits like optimism that usually will tend to elevate it a bit for us, but even then, resilience is a state, and what that means is we can, and I would argue have to, nourish it so that we keep that baseline, so to speak, as high as possible. And so, no, it's not a given. We need to have it on our radar as something to nourish actively, deliberately, and I would argue strategically.
Tell us how readers will gain insight in your book.
What the book does is first discuss this perception that we have that we may not need it, just so we get real in some ways, deal with all the misconceptions. And then it brings the reader through a reflection. And it is a brief book. It's fairly concise. If you're flying from one side of the continent to the other, you can get in your flight with that book and get out with your plans. It's fairly straightforward. The exercises are brief, sometimes 5 minutes, sometimes at the most 10, 15 minutes. But it brings you through a reflection that will cover things like your values, your sources of supply and demand, but again, in a very realistic way, and I explain that. And I'm happy to talk more about this here as well. I guide people through getting a fuller understanding of their current context, internal and external, which then leads us to an actual plan. Usually we'll have three pillars, like a strategic plan in business, main directions, And then within each of these three, very concrete, very small, doable actions, so small that we can, for all of us, and it will vary. Yours, Tamara, will be different from mine if we were to do and revise our plan today, but they will be doable. We can start implementing them tomorrow, easy. And that's what the book does, because only with these actual behavioral changes, we can start increasing and sustaining that resilience over time.
Tell us about how you have everything you've wanted, but it can have a negative effect on your mental health.
It's like broccoli. If you have too much of it, it's not going to be ideal. You do need a diversity. And so sometimes you could have only very positive things you want. Now, I'll give you an example. You could, you know, just have found a person you very much want to spend the rest of your life with. You're planning to celebrate that union. Okay. And you're planning a trip to celebrate this. And you're moving to a new place together. And you just accepted a new role at work that you're very excited about. So we've got only things you've wanted, and they're all demanding. So even if they're positive, they're demanding of your energy, right? All this planning on the personal side, all those changes, all those decisions, all of this will require energy. So it could actually drain your battery, even if it's positive. And so what having a plan does is help you ensure that you do see these, in this case, very positive things still as demands, and therefore you very much want to build on the other side of the equation. You want to build your sources of supply. And as you do this, then you can continue with these very positive parts of your life that are happening right now while maintaining your high levels of energy, resilience, health, and everything you want.
Tell us when it's time to take a step back.
Well, you know, step back. And there's all kinds of ways of stepping back, right? Sometimes, and I would say, the more we've increased our self-awareness, the more often we're checking in with ourselves. A lot of people, more and more people, do this as they experiment with meditation, for example. And there are other ways to do this. But the more you increase your self-awareness, which will also help your emotional intelligence, the more you will catch it proactively and sooner if your levels of resilience are sliding down, right? And so if you catch this soon, then the stepping back may be a small step back. It may be realizing you don't actually want to go out of town this weekend. You need to stay put and rebuild your energy through simpler, less demanding things at home. That's possible. But sometimes what happens is people do not check in with themselves, and so they go from feeling fine or telling themselves they're fine, even though really it's not going great, until it's not going well at all. And then people will find themselves with more significant impacts on their mental health, which then impacts our functioning, like how well we do our job. Things like our concentration, not as good. We get more impatient at moments where really we would never usually and don't want to, frankly. And so then you get to a point where you may not even have the health to do your work. If you're doing jobs that are safety sensitive, you actually may not be healthy enough to be there at all. And so there are moments where if you've waited too long or if you didn't pay attention, for all kinds of reasons, sometimes it's in your hands, sometimes it's outside of your hands, but people sometimes will find themselves at a point where their health just does not allow them to be at work. And that's when sometimes people will need to take a stress leave or a medical leave to bring their health back to where it needs to be so that they can return to work in a healthy way.
Tell us about crafting a custom strategic resilience plan.
Yeah, that's the core idea. And sometimes people will say, you know, what's the difference between, you know, building my resilience and having a strategic resilience plan? Here it is. Ways to build our resilience, especially now that we've all gone through the pandemic and heard about all the things that would increase our resilience. And these things are research-based. They are actually very effective. you know, when we've heard things like, okay, exercise, and by that we mean cardio, strength training, meditative type activity like yoga, meditation, tai chi, and making sure you have good nutrition, making sure you sleep 7 to 8 hours a night, making sure you spend time in relationships with people you enjoy spending time with. And there are others, like time in nature, community. So we know these things. It's not a knowing problem. It's an implementation problem. And what happened in my work with people is I found myself at some point using the analogy of a business. So if you and me, Tamara, we're running a business, and at some point we have a great idea for a new product or a new service. If you have this great idea, do you just say, okay, we've got a great idea, let's launch it? Or do we say, we have a great idea, let's look at who else is also offering this exact same thing? How much are they charging for it? Who is willing to pay for this? What forces in the future, near or far, may influence this, this overall dynamic? We would do all this, right? We would look at the context and we would take that into account to then launch a product that takes the context into account, and we would likely be more successful. So same thing here. We need to be strategic about our resilience. Just knowing, having the great idea, is not enough. We need to connect it with our context. So for example, brief example perhaps, let's say this is you, Tamara. We haven't done that, but let's say you've listed your values and one of them includes family, let's say. And then we've looked at your sources of supply and demand, and we've realized how many demands you're facing and how, surprisingly, your column of resources is actually very, very small. There's not many things in there. And we've looked at your context where, yes, you tend to value resilience. You'd love to invest more, but you also tend to say yes a lot to a lot of opportunities that are exciting to you, but then sometimes it becomes too much. And then externally, yes, you have actually great family members, but you don't end up seeing them often because they live a bit far, and you tend to say, well, that's a long drive, so I'm not going to go. Well, maybe we're in your particular strategic plan, if we were to increase your resilience based on all this, there may be a pillar that we're going to call family. And under that pillar, there may be an action where we'll say, you know what, at least once every 2 months, I will plan it in advance. So the weekend before, I'm taking it easy. The weekend after, I'm taking it easy. But that weekend, I am getting in the car and going to visit family because it's something that's important for me and I want to create space for it. And that's just an example. But that's how you get to a plan that is very specific to you in your current context and will likely increase your resilience in an efficient and successful way.
Tell us the proven reasons why too much optimism can become a liability.
Optimism is a beautiful thing, right? That's in part what pushes us forward. That's part of, you know, that's those moments in life where we say, oh, yeah, I can do this. We're going to figure it out. It's going to work. And all that is extremely good and useful and adaptive. It's good. We want to keep this. But then if we do this, only this, all the time, inevitably, there will be moments where we're telling ourselves, oh, yeah, I can do this, we're going to make it, when we're actually ignoring some sources of demand, some the size of some of those demands. We're saying, oh, yeah, not a big deal. Sure, you know, my child's having challenges at school. I'm supporting my child. That's fine. The reality is that you're thinking about this most of the day and a large part of the night. So it is significant. It is a demand. Yes, we want to keep our optimism, but we want to make sure we recognize this. Because if we don't, if we don't recognize the actual size and quantity of demands we're facing, of course we're not going to have any reason that, you know, sure, we're not going to have motivation, but we won't even have a reason to actually carve out time, and it's not a lot, but it still needs to be there, to nourish our strategic resilience. So what I'm saying is optimism, fantastic. Pushed too far, we may need to rein it in just a little bit so that we have good, realistic visibility on our actual context. Because from there, we can operate from a much more grounded perspective. It does give us more control over what needs to happen and implementing it.
I'm Tamara Wallace talking with Dr. M.H. Marie Ellen Pelletier from Vancouver, Canada. We have learned about her book. On that note, we're going to take a short break, but we will be right back. We will learn more about her book. I'm Tamara Wallace visiting with Dr. M.H. Marie Ellen Pelletier from Vancouver, Canada. We have learned about her book, The Resilience Plan, A Strategic Approach to Optimizing Your Work Performance and Mental Health. Now we are going to find out more about her book. Dr. M.H., tell us the mental health strategies for busy professions and how to identify blind spots.
You know, the blind spots, I think you want to look at your own patterns. You want to start, if you feel like it, that's one of the exercises that you could consider. Step back and look at the few times in particularly your professional life. You could use your personal life as well. Often the same patterns play out. But you could look at looking back in your life last, you know, whatever, 5, 10 plus years, when your resilience was sliding down, what was probably going on in this time? And for many people that I work with, one of those blind spots is ignoring the signs and just telling themselves, well, that's normal, that's okay, I don't have time, it's not that bad, that kind of thing, until we cannot ignore them anymore. One of the blind spots is to, yes, we are actually experiencing these signs, but we push them aside very quickly. You know, when we talk about, say, burnout, burnout is not a medical diagnosis, it's an occupational phenomenon, and it involves exhaustion, cynicism and impact on our performance. But early signs, before we get to these, burnout does not appear instantly. Sometimes it feels like this, but it's because we didn't listen to any of the signs and we just realized it down the road. But the reality is that it built over time. So before being exhausted, we are overextended. Before we're fully cynical, we're starting to feel less engaged. And before there's work performance problem, we're starting to see more things and more significant things fall through the cracks. Right? So for all of us, there are things that fall through the cracks from time to time. That's normal. We try to minimize this, but, you know, it happens. The size and the amount of things falling through the cracks is just more than your usual. You want to pay attention to this and the other signs I mentioned. Otherwise, they're blind spots. They were there for you. We were just not looking.
Tell us about grin and bear it.
Oh, sometimes we'll have that tendency to assume, to equate resilience with persistence. Right? Just keep going, put your head down, no matter what's going on, don't give up, keep going. And resilience is not about that. Resilience is not about persistence at all costs, at all. To the contrary, it's about the opposite, having a realistic perspective on what's going on and adapting. Otherwise, it's similar to, and sometimes people... you would have heard these stories where, you know, a leader in an organization tells in a town hall to everyone, you know, everyone, the next few months will be extremely demanding. We're just going to have to go through no matter what, and not everyone's going to make it, and that's fine by me. That is the equivalent of telling a group of people, look, people, we're all going to go in the extreme north, and whatever you're wearing today is what you've got. Go. You know, some of us will survive, some of us won't. That's not going to go great. That would be just doing it no matter what, not being realistic. If instead, yeah, we're going to go in the extreme north, and here is your equipment. We now have boots that can tolerate minus 100 or 500, whatever. Have clothes that will allow you to stay healthy and stay safe. Then we can go through. So it's not about just keep going no matter what. It's be aware of what the context is. Put in the resources so that you can go through, given what's there, as opposed to ignoring, minimizing, or pretending it's not there. No, we want to take this into account, planning the right support so that, yes, we can go through with the resilience.
Tell us about workplace anxiety.
Anxiety in the workplace or in personal life can take different forms and can be there for a number of reasons. But often in the workplace, well, one of the ways in which it can show in the workplace is a sense of fear, worries, fear, concerns about certain situations. And sometimes there's a combination of factors that are happening there. Some of those factors may be within ourselves, within our head. So just on our own, we're actually making this worse. I'll come back to this. And then there are the workplace variables, the actual reality of the context that by its nature is pushing more people to have more fear and more worry. Okay. So to give you a concrete example, you may have someone who's feeling highly anxious about a large new project that is launching next week in the workplace, and they're worried that they may not be able to deliver on what they're asked to deliver. And then in their head, they're thinking, there's no way I can do this. I will never be able to succeed in this kind of role. And of course, that generates a lot of anxiety. And on the work side, yeah, communication about this large project was given with some information, but very high level, leaving a lot of the details, which is exactly what everyone needs to see clearly through this and make good plans and figure themselves out. But we don't have it. So in the absence of it, that's actually creating more concerns. So in this particular example, two things we can do that will help decrease that anxiety. On the personal side, we want to watch how we're thinking. When we're hearing ourselves think in very absolute terms, I will never make it. This is not going to work. You may want to ask yourself, do I know for sure, 100% certain that this is the case? And that will usually force you to get away from the sort of all or nothing thinking and instead realize, well, no, I cannot predict the future, so we don't know. I've actually gone through other situations like this before and we actually made it. So what's going on really is that I need more information. And okay, I'm going to go talk to my boss and ask. See, so now I've managed my brain here. But then on the work side, if we have a large new project that's coming, let's not just think about sharing this information. Let's also think about what's going to help our teams be successful in receiving it, in giving them the agency, the independence, the autonomy, to think about all the ways in which they can support this goal and we can benefit from their contribution. And often there are things from the workplace perspective that can be done on that front.
Tell us about burnout in regards to the superhero myth.
Yeah, you know, it connects with some of the myths that I was talking about on resilience. Like I said, right, so burnout comes from has these three characteristics: exhaustion, cynicism, and an impact on our performance. And one of the key things about burnout, it's very important, is that it's actually not just in us here as an individual. Burnout is in the workplace. The workplace is a system in which we have us here as individuals. We also have our teams, and the teams are within the organization. And even at a larger level, this overall organization is in this country at this moment in time. So it's within an even larger system as well. And that's important because all of these parts of the system are influencing how we here as individuals, how we're doing, how we're feeling, if we're going to burn out or not. And it's important because sometimes we tend to think that it's all in our hands. I am super strong. I can go through anything. And if I decide, nothing's going to get to me, right? That kind of thinking. And that's not how humans work. This thinking works well for a robot. A robot can be programmed to just operate that way, and that's a robot. But humans, we don't. There is a degree of influence we can have on our health, but there's also a part that we just cannot override. So burnout is often described, and I think that's very helpful, as being in the relationship between us as individuals and our workplace. It's not just in the individual. It's not just in the workplace either. It's in the relationship. And that's important, right? Because then that means, well, no, I cannot just own this entire thing here as an individual. At the same time, yes, there are things we can do, ways in which we can mitigate the risks, protect ourselves, and increase our resilience as much as we can so that we can deal with whatever context is going on in the workplace, including at times evaluating that, you know what, it's not healthy for me to stay here. And that happens as well. We need to think about burnout as this overall systemic situation because that's the reality of things that, yes, we can protect ourselves, and I would say we absolutely want to do that because only us as individuals can do this best and be realistic that it's not 100% in our hands. It's also influenced by the workplace.
Dr. MH, in our jobs, tell us why excelling isn't quite enough and about the safety for ourselves to thrive at work and avoid burnout.
Just excelling, it depends, right? But the reality is that whether you're a formal leader of a team, that's especially true if you are, but even when we're not in a formal leadership role, we are influencing others, want it or not. Even if sometimes we really think we're not, and we're very, whether it's out of humility or because we truly don't think anyone pays attention, the reality is, yes, we are influencing others. And so the more we can, the more we nourish our own resilience, the more we pay attention to our mindset, to being focused on learning from mistakes, for example, things like that. All this will influence others. And so we don't just want to focus on excelling in the technical thing that we're doing. That's great to do that, of course. We also want to pay attention to the influence we have on people around us. So that's the one aspect of, yeah, we don't want to just focus on excelling in our specific goals and tasks individually. We do want to think about the influence on others. And one of these areas of influence is contributing to a psychologically healthy and safe team environment. And that means a number of things. But if I were to summarize it in the clearest way I find, is to contribute to an environment where if 99% of people on this team, so let's say we are 10 people, if 9 people are voting, saying something, a particular opinion about how we could drive this project, and there is person number 10 who's thinking completely differently, that person would feel comfortable sharing their opinion to this group and know that people will listen, respect, and that perspective will be welcome. We may still decide for the other alternative that the 9 other people are supporting, or we may actually together find yet a third option. But the point is, we're feeling like we can come up with a completely different perspective and express it, and that it will be received with respect. That's an example of psychological health and safety in a team. And we want this, because that's how we're often getting to even better ideas, more creative, innovative ideas. But also, Tamara, as AI makes its way even more into so many parts of our lives, work life, personal life, we want to make sure we're raising it if we have concerns, if we have different perspectives, if we have ideas, so that we are actively engaged in finding the best ways to have AI as a work partner, for example, and moments where we're going to say, no, this is going to be done by a human.
I'm Tamara Wallace, talking with Dr. M.H. Marie Ellen Pelletier from Vancouver, Canada. We have learned about her book, The Resilience Plan, a strategic approach to optimizing your work performance and mental health. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, we will learn about why she wrote the book and how you can get a copy. Back on the front porch, I'm Tamara Wallace, visiting with Dr. M.H. Marie Ellen Pelletier from Vancouver, Canada. We have learned about her book. Now we are going to find out about why she wrote the book, The Resilience Plan, a strategic approach to optimizing your work performance and mental health, and how you can get a copy of it. Dr. M.H., first, tell us the connection between anxiety and burnout.
Burnout is this occupational phenomenon with exhaustion, cynicism, and impact on our performance. And as occupational phenomenon, it is not the diagnosis in itself, but it can lead down the road to diagnosis on the physical health side of things, like high blood pressure, for example, and others, or diagnosis on the mental health side of things, like depression or anxiety, to your question. And so it may or may not get us there, and that's in part why I'm so encouraging everyone to really pay attention early to these signs, because we can get the signs of burnout without getting to those diagnoses if we catch them as early as possible, get support, connect with resources like a mental health professional, a psychologist, or others. Or if you speak to an executive coach, you can start there because they can also help you find additional resources if you need them. And more, I see people finding, and I encourage people to do that, finding a resource early. So while everything is fine, burnout is not even on the radar right now, fantastic. What resources do you have? Would you consider speaking to, say, a psychologist once a year in a proactive way? Would you perhaps want to create a group of peers that just connect on a quarterly basis, perhaps to check in with each other? These are ways to get ahead of this, get proactive, and build a group of resources and even community around you.
Tell us the psychological tools to elevate your edge at work and beyond for maximum productivity.
Oh, lots. This is a big question, and there could be many tools there. I think I'm going to start with something that most people were aware of, some of the strategies I mentioned earlier, like just front loading as much as you can on a healthy lifestyle with being active, eating well, sleeping well. As simple as these things look, seriously, if resilience was a mathematical equation, these variables would really account for most of it. So they are very significant. And what I would say is a lot of people have heard about the research that supports the importance of meditation. Yet, it is probably the one thing that most people have not yet either tried or incorporated in a more stable way in their lives. And by stable, I don't mean absolutely every day. Maybe you're aiming at this, but if you miss a day, then get back to it the following day. You need to have some agility in how you implement this. So I would say consider, there are many, obviously, many answers to this particular question, but one that I think is probably most overlooked and holds so much potential is bringing in meditation in your life. And you can start very small. Find an app that speaks to you. Start with 1 or 2 minutes, 5, whatever, and build from there.
Tell us the solutions to overcome the daily demands and unexpected challenges.
I would say that probably the best approach to consider is to plan proactively, to front load, because there will be unexpected demands that will happen, right? On a daily, weekly, monthly, that's what life is. It happens. That's normal. And so the more we have front-loaded, the more we have built up our resilience prior to these things happening, the better. So, because then you're going to enter these phases from what I call a higher baseline, right? So I would say that would be the ideal. If you're now in this high-demand phase and you're saying, okay, well, it's too late for proactive planning, I'm in it now, then I would say still plan ahead for future as soon as you emerge from this one. But for right now, as often as you can, back to the breath, slowing down your breath, often starting with bringing all the air out until you've got nothing, completely out, and then slowly breathing in. This is a very sort of in the immediate term strategy, technique. However, it is the fastest way to tell your brain to relax. So faster than telling yourself, oh, I need to calm down, I need to relax, if instead you slow your breath very much, that communicates with your brain even faster. So in the immediate term, I would do this, but as soon as you can, I would go into looking at the fuller picture and front loading for the next round.
Tell us about mindset makeover.
You want to think about, how is your mindset? Do I tend to think that things are the way they are, they can't change? Am I thinking mistakes should never happen, and if they do, it's terrible? Do I have an opportunity? We hear a lot about this growth mindset concept. It is research-based, research-backed up, and makes immense sense from various theoretical and practical perspectives. But a short way to do this is to shift your thinking as quickly as you can in as many situations as you can. And if that's new for you especially, then I would say start with super small situations and help your brain think in the learning type of way. So if something happens that was not the plan, not what you wanted, or is a mistake entirely, then you can say, okay, well, that was not the plan, and I'm going to learn from it. And so once you do this, even if you're just telling that to yourself in your head, that starts shifting. Instead of the alarm center going on because you're thinking, there's a problem, I made a mistake, it's terrible, which generally would actually activate the fight or flight response, you're getting tense, it actually decreases the activation of other parts of your brain because the entire brain is now more focused on dealing with the threat, so to speak. If you change the mindset to, okay, this happened, and I'm going to learn from this, then it decreases that alarm center. It reactivates other parts of the brain that are looking for, yeah, okay, let's find the way we're going to learn and move forward with this. And it changes your approach. It actually will lead to better solutions, will contribute to you being even more resilient. And the beauty with this is you can say this out loud. And if you say it out loud, you're going to help others also potentially consider that approach, that mindset. And I would say, if you have children around you, your own or children of other people, make sure you say this from time to time, because that's an approach that will be helpful for them too. And that way we all contribute to, for all of us, creating an even healthier mindset.
Dr. MH, tell us about the emotional intelligence and a leader's ability to demonstrate resilience and adapt to changing circumstances.
Emotional intelligence, we've heard a lot about it in the recent years. We're hearing a bit more about it these days. And one of the key components of emotional intelligence is to first increase your own self-awareness. We're not going to be great at understanding where others are coming from, communicating with others, whether it's listening better, expressing ourselves better, unless we first figure ourselves out and have that self-awareness. Now, as a leader, the leader is a human as well. So as leaders, we are impacted by the demands we're facing on the personal and the professional side. So we can't, yes, we to some degree separate personal and professional lives. That's normal and healthy. At the same time, from a demands perspective, emotions don't have lanes, right? We're all within one individual here. Hence the importance of being self-aware, knowing what's going on in your life, how it's impacting you, how much it's impacting you. And it's not going to, therefore, throw you for an entire spin. It will just give you good visibility on this. And then you can move forward with this. And that is important because, as a leader, part of what constantly needs to happen is managing challenges, managing situations that need support. Agility is a key part of what a leader needs to do to go through the new demands that they're facing. And that agility will be influenced by where we're coming from, hence our self-awareness. So you see how all of this connects with each other. We need to be self-aware. That's increasing our emotional intelligence. That improves our ability to be agile, which connects with our ability to be even more resilient. It's all going together.
Dr. MH, you have thoroughly explained your book. Getting a copy of the book, though, is good because there are exercises you can do as you're reading the book, like I did when I read it. So tell us how we can get a copy of your book.
You can get a copy anywhere where you get your books. You can support independent booksellers, go to your local bookstore, visit. If the book is there, wonderful. If the book is not there, talk to the owner, ask them to order the book, to bring it in. You can also see online places that you usually visit, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all these. And then you can also read more about it online on my website, drmarie-helen.com, or theresilienceplan.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn. I always love to hear from listeners, from anyone who's interested in this overall area.
Dr. Yes. M.H. Marie-Helen Pelletier, can you please spell your name?
Oh, yes. Full name. So in case you're wanting to find me on LinkedIn, perhaps. So it's first name is Marie-Helen. So M-A-R-I-E hyphen H-E-L-E-N, like November, E. And last name is Pelletier. P like Peter, E-L-L-E-T like Tom, I-E-R.
Tamara Wallace here on the front porch talking with Dr. M.H. Marie-Helen Pelletier from Vancouver, Canada. We have learned about her book, The Resilience Plan, A Strategic Approach to Optimizing Your Work Performance and Mental Health. I have had the most pleasure speaking with Dr. M.H. Marie-Helen Pelletier. Thank you, Dr. M.H., for joining us for On the Front Porch and to all who joined our conversation.
Thank you, Tamara. It was an absolute pleasure.